Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 1:29 p.m. That is Pacific Summer Time, and today is May 16th. Well, fireworks finally arrived in the Italian bond markets in here today, and finally springing to life, considering the risk that is outstanding. When we look at the situation, it's really quite simple. You have two populist parties that have are drawing increasingly close to announcing a partnership and a coalition government, and they're hewing to their commitment that there's going to be a flat tax, and that there's also going to be a big increase in social spending. Quite where the money is going to come from is a big question, and they're already talking about a debt write-down. Well, that's not good news for the ECB, not least because it's been the ECB that has been supporting the Italian bond market for much of the last 4 years. There is a reason why the Italian bond is currently around the 2% level, and US treasuries are in excess of 3%, and it's because the ECB has been buying them. Well, if the ECB is going to have any leverage at all, they've got to stop buying the bonds in order to chasten this new administration, give them a taste of what it's like to have bond yields up around 7%, and then they may have some sense of reality, considering that the bond yield has been somewhere between 1 and 2% for the last almost 4 years, is obviously something that these politicians seem to have got used to. Well, it isn't just that you have a move in Italian bonds. U.S. 10-year treasuries are currently testing the 3.1% level, and this looks like a breakout that has got legs. That a range is an explosion waiting to happen. Not only did we have a short-term range below 3%, but we've had this very volatile base formation with an amplitude of 100% from trough to peak, and that's really quite characteristic of what we see inside base formations. It's not at all unusual that we have a trough to peak move of 100%. In fact, you might even consider that to be normal, because one of the abiding characteristics that you have at the top of every range is when something has already moved 100%, people start to think, well, I can't possibly short it now because it's already moved too much. But the reality is that a range is an explosion waiting to happen, and this is an emphatic breakout. So there is the potential for yields to move higher from here. And the first area of potential resistance is probably somewhere around 3.5%. And when we start to think about what does that mean for longer-term investors, well, the vast majority of people buy bonds because of the total return. When you're thinking about pension funds, they're not trading in and out on an intraday basis or even an intra-week basis, but they start to think about things in terms of matching durations to matching the duration of the portfolio to exactly how much they're going to have to pay out in future. And that's when total return really does start to make a difference, because one of the reasons that people buy bonds is because if the price goes down, well, at least you're getting the cash flow from the coupons. And adding them together, one has generally helped to compensate for the other over the course of the last 30-odd years. But the total return on bonds is rolling over. It has increasingly got this completing type 3 top formation characteristics, and it was breaking down yesterday. Now, this is an index that's is reported with a one-day lag, so it's going to be lower again tomorrow. But when we look at the consistency of the trend, then it had this progression of higher reaction lows year after year after year, and now that has ended. And when the most consistent trend in the world becomes inconsistent, well, then we have to wake up and start to pay attention. So this is of particular note for total return bond funds. So, for example, here's the PIMCO Active Bond Exchange Traded Fund, and it is in a downtrend. One of perhaps the more important points is that it has a market cap of 2.1 billion. Then that, of course, is not the only That is not the only total return bond fund. The double line fund, total return bond fund actively managed, is also in a downtrend. It's in fact, an even bigger downtrend. And it also has got oodles of money in it, assets under management of 50 billion. So when you start adding all of this money up together, we can pretty much see that this is rather alarming, because so many people have got a 60-40 split, or a 50-50 split, or a 70-30 split, but they have large percentages of bonds in their portfolio, and this is going to be looking ugly when they start looking at annual reports, considering that these yields have been rising now for the better part of a year and a half. Then, when we look at the 2-year, well, the 2-year bond yield is at levels that we haven't seen really since 2008. It's back up to 2.6%. So this was also a dynamic move in here today, and there is a clear acceleration on the short end of the curve. Now, when we look at the yield curve spread, it's at 50 basis points. So it has jumped 11 basis points in just the last week, because the long end is now moving faster than the short end. But this is still a downward trend overall. So these are important characteristics, and against this background, the stock market has been re reasonably steady. The Dow Jones was up about 60 points in here today, relatively quiet. The Nasdaq 100 was also in positive territory. So this is still a reasonably benign environment. How can we square that? How is it that bond yields are rising and the equity market is still reasonably robust? Well, people are concluding that we still have a reasonably impressive bull market environment, that earnings have come through, that we have been through a corrective phase, some of the froth has been blown off, and that the Federal Reserve wouldn't really be raising interest rates aggressively if it weren't for the fact that we have a very strong economy. Well, eventually, the Federal Reserve will raise rates enough that it will curtail growth, and that's generally when you get an inverted yield curve. We're not there yet. 50 basis points is not zero, and it will take some time before we get there. Perhaps the more pressing issue right now is to keep an eye on oil prices. They remain really very firm. Now, one of the important characteristics right now is that oil is trading in a backwardation right across the curve, all the way out to 2024. But this is a condition that we see right across the distillates as well. So when we look at, for example, the gasoline market, it is more choppy because of the refinery regime, that they do need to be shut down for maintenance from on occasion. So you do get a cyclicality to the market, but there is clearly a backwardation in this market for gasoline, also for heating oil, and also for gas oil. So that does contribute to a short-term supply deficit, and they are all trending higher in a reasonably consistent manner. Now, we do have short-term overbought conditions, but in the absence of a clear downward move in crude oil, then these are high beta plays on the crude oil price. If we get surging oil prices, well, then that will represent a headwind. It also contributes to inflationary pressures. And when we think about where crude oil is right now, well, it's closing in on the $80 level, and it is a little bit overbought in the short term. So it's not beyond the bounds of possibility that we get another pause. But a reaction of more than $5 is really the minimum required to question the consistency of this advance. And even then, it would be a sustained move below the trend mean, to really signal that we have reached a peak of more than short-term significance. So this is still a really quite impressive advance. The most impressive bull market right now in the commodity complex is in lumber, and it was a limit up again today. This is a clear acceleration, and what was interesting yesterday was that they widened the limits, and they moved it from a $10 to a $15 limit, and today it seems that the limit is back down to $10. So I think they are beginning to experiment at least with widening limits, and the next condition will be that they will increase margins. When they increase margins on this contract, that is likely to be very close to a peak because it's going to rapidly increase the quantity of money that needs to be put up to maintain long positions. And then people have to make a decision about whether they are going to continue to hold it or whether they're going to take some profits off the table, or even just to take some profit off the table to pay for the additional margin that they have on the remaining position. So this is a rarefied territory. It is beginning to have a knock-on effect for home builders. Home builders broke down below the trend mean in here this week. And they are being pressured both by the fact that interest rates are rising, which is increasing mortgage rates, and also by the cost of production. Then, of course, we also are at a position where credit card interest rates are highs that haven't been seen in years because of this higher interest rate environment. They've been enjoying these wonderful wide margins for quite some time, whereas the banking sector has been curtailed by the interest rate environment. The credit card providers have been doing fantastically well. Visa is somewhat overbought in the short term, but it remains in really a very consistent advance. That's really been in evidence since the first month of 2009. Then, when we look elsewhere around the world, well, because of I think the realization that there is still some risk in Europe, the dollar was a little bit firmer in here today, but not in a dynamic manner. There is, I think, we're still in a rather important area for the euro. It has broken its downtrend. If there were a midpoint danger line, I think it would be very arguable whether it has been triggered or not right now by the euro. And when we think about what the trend has been, and it had been so very consistent, this is a really quite clear trend inconsistency. But what we are starting to see is that in some of the most overextended of the trends, there has been a little bit of steadying, even for the Turkish lira or for the Argentine peso. There is a little bit of evidence that some strength is beginning to come back in, and not least because Argentina has raised short-term interest rates to 40%. But longer term, when we think about the fact that the Federal Reserve is the only central bank that is raising interest rates and doing so in a reasonably consistent manner, it is also the only central bank that is reducing the size of its balance sheet. And it has taken 150 billion out of circulation over the course of the last 6 months. So it is engaged in this balance sheet runoff. That also means that the Federal Reserve is buying fewer bonds, and that is contributing to these higher yields overall. So there are a number of factors that are driving these yields higher. Now, the question is, will the Federal Reserve have enough time to rearm its interest rate weapon before we get to the next recession? That is very much an open question. But what I think is really quite important is that oil prices may be going up now in a very rapid manner, but they're not yet at eye-watering levels that might represent a challenge. But from the other indicators that we look at for a future recession, then high yield spreads are conspicuously static. They have done nothing at all. And that's despite the fact that junk bond yields have been rising, but they are not rising faster than the run-up in treasury yields. And if there were real stress in the market, then they would be running up faster, and that would contribute to additional pressure. When we look at what's going on in the UK, then the FTSE 100 has raced up from the low just below 7,000 to retest the peak in January. And there is a short-term overbought condition. The weakness of the pound has certainly helped it to get up here, but I think the much broader perspective is that it ranged below 7,000 for the better part of 16 years, and then it has now broken above it, and it is sustaining the move above 7,000. This has first step above the base formation characteristics. And considering that the FTSE 100 is a very internationally oriented index, which has got a significant weighting in the energy sector, well, this is, I think, a rather important characteristic that it is weighted by energy and by the pharmaceutical sector, and then also by the resources sector. And then there are banks in there as well. So these are all part of the cyclical bull market coterie of instruments that tend to do better in a bull market environment, which is in its latter stages. So the FTSE 100 should be doing better in this environment, and it does appear to be doing so. Then, when we look at the mid-cap index, it is approaching its peak in the UK. The MDAX in Germany is also rallying back up towards the upper side of its range, and the Russell 2000 was pushing on and moved to a new all-time high briefly in here today, but it does look like it is primed to break on the upside. And that would be the first one of the major US indices to do so, and it would, I think, raise the possibility that we are going to see this consolidation resolved on the upside, that there is at least another up leg in this bull market before we hit another medium-term peak. Then the gold market was relatively unchanged in here today. It has broken below $1,300, and today it did not jump straight back up above it again. The important point about the trend in gold is that it has dipped below the trend mean on five separate occasions now since starting to recover again in early 2017, and on previous occasions it has bounced in a dynamic manner. So it's going to need to bounce in a dynamic manner, and most particularly to hold the progression of higher reaction lows if this is going to continue to be given the benefit of the doubt. Then, when we look at what's going on in Asia, the strength of the dollar has sent the yen back above the 110 level. The Nikkei has been bouncing, but it is a bit overbought in the short term, and the second section was a little bit weaker in here today. It continues to look like it is going to just need some more time in order to continue to consolidate in the region of this 7,000 area. Then, when we look at the Japanese banks, it's been my contention that if we are moving back into an inflationary environment, that Japan would be one of the places where that could benefit most, and for the simple reason that they have been chasing inflation for longer than anyone else. And then, if that is indeed the case, then the banks stand to benefit. This looks like a lengthy range above the base that was put in between 2011 and 2012, and a sustained move above 200 would confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment beyond the short term. MSCI has announced that they are going to introduce 200 of the A shares into the emerging market index on June 1st. So that has the potential to act as a bullish catalyst for the A share market. There are already plenty of Japanese share, excuse me, of Chinese shares in the emerging markets index, but they're all listed in either Hong Kong or the USA, or at least abroad. That what this is going to do is introduce large A shares like Muthai or some of the bigger semi-state owned businesses into the global market. So that has the potential to act as a bullish catalyst for the A share market, but it's showing a scant sign of enthusiasm about it just yet. And it really does need to sustain a move back above the trend mean to confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. Meanwhile, the H share index was in mildly positive territory in here today, although it printed just less than a point lower than yesterday's close. It was well off the lows. A sustained move back above 12,500 would really begin to confirm that more than very short-term support has been found around this 12,000 level. The Indian rupee was a little bit steadier today, and it's back in the region of the peak, excuse me, of the dollar's peak, or the lows, or which are around 68 rupees to the dollar. So this is a natural area where the rupee should be beginning to find support, but considering that the stock market has been doing well in nominal terms because the rupee has been weak, it's probably better to look at the outlook for it on a currency adjusted basis. So, for example, the JP Morgan Indian Investment Trust, which is pound denominated, has pulled back from the region of the trend mean. That was a large pullback that we saw at the beginning of this year, and now we're starting to see evidence of the trend mean being resistance rather than support. So, this is a rather key area, and it is probably going to require some evidence that the rupee can firm from these areas, from the current area, to really begin to confirm that foreign investors are willing to support the Indian market beyond short-term steadying. So I think that there are risks, and most particularly in Europe, and most particularly in the bond markets. But so far, the stock market has been reasonably firm, and the most important thing is that we had the big pullback in February, and that we've had a higher progression of higher reaction lows since. And as long as that remains the case, then this looks like a medium-term correction within the stock market. It can last for anything up to from 6 to 9 months, or excuse me, 6 to 18 months. And if the Russell 2000 does in fact break on the upside in a sustained manner, well, then the odds would favor that the ranging consolidation would last closer to 6 months rather than the 18-month horizon. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.